The date is Monday, October 6, 2008. And we have a special greeting here, at least for those of you that are on Fillmore Productions or are dialing into Fillmore Productions, whether you have an account with Fillmore Productions or not, as well as anyone hearing this over the internet through podcasting and links and all this that have been emailed to you from other places. My name is Michelle Dyer, and we have a special program for you today. We have an interview here that we want to do with someone who has stepped out and has been willing to put himself out there as doing something very interesting, and I think it's quite exciting, and I wanted to give him an opportunity to share with all of the listeners and anyone out there listening to us at this point in time, an opportunity to get to know him, to get a feel for who he is and what he's all about. His name is Harry Brown, and he is wanting to be the President of the United States as a write-in candidate. Sure, there isn't a whole lot of time, but folks, if you hear his story and you like his platform and you really appreciate and can, you know, follow what he's saying, then there's time for you to be able to choose him as your selection for the President of the United States. Before I get to Harry, I would like to make it clear that we take a nonpartisan point of view, and this is a bit different than what I would normally do on my Fillmore greeting or for any podcast or any other form of media, but I did want to give Harry an opportunity to speak and to be heard. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Harry Brown. Good morning, Harry.
Well, good morning, Michelle. Good to be with you.
All right. It is just after 10 a.m. Eastern time at the time we're recording this, so people had a point of reference. But I would like to, before I actually start asking you questions about your candidacy and everything like this, I would like to say Harry is a personal friend of mine. I've known Harry and spoken to him, and we've, you know, communicated back and forth off and on since at least 2005, and I can tell you that Harry is a stand-up person. He is everything that he says he is. He is a great friend. He is an awesome person, wonderful Christian person, has been, you know, counseled me in certain areas. He's counseled other people in areas of finance. He's counseled churches, he's counseled other organizations in the areas of Christian finance, and he also has a heart for children with special needs and has a real desire to see communities changed by not only the power of God, but the idea of sound godly principles and ideas. And I can tell you, like I said, he's a trustworthy human being. He's a good friend. He's loyal. So I guarantee you, if he's loyal as a friend, he will be great as our president. And I wish him the best. All right, Harry, let's talk a little bit about yourself before we talk about your platform. Tell us a little bit about you and about what, you know, just kind of give the audience a feel for who you are as a person.
I'd be glad to. I was born in Detroit, Michigan, in 1964, so I know what people in the inner cities go through. Having lived in the city of Detroit proper, also lived in the suburbs, so I know what people go through in the suburbs. And in 1978, I was an alcoholic. I'm a recovering alcoholic of 30 years. This year,
praise God.
And yeah, amen. And so at the age of 15, on New Year's Day, about 12:30 in the morning, I stumble from one room to the other in my house. I just lost my mother. I was living with my brother and sister-in-law at the time. And God said, I want your life. I can do better with you than what you're doing, because what you're doing is a mess. And so I came to Christ and a friend of mine led me to Christ. So I came to Christ, and because I was in rebellion against him at that time, and I was drinking. Our family was full of drinkers, and I was one of them at that young age. So it's amazing that I'm where I'm at today, all the way from a 15-year-old alcoholic to possibly being the next president of your United States of America, the greatest country in the world, and the world leader, world-leading nation. So it's very interesting how that happens, how God can take a life, and when they submit it to him, and he can do great things with it and through it, no matter who you are and where you are or how much resources you have or how little you have. In 1984, on a Monday morning, when I lived in Plainwell, Michigan, near Kalamazoo, between Kalamazoo and Grand Rapids in the southwest part of the state, we have, here in the Midwest, we have a lot of ice storms. Well, we had one that Monday morning. And I'm sitting there minding my own business, and all of a sudden I listen to a news story on the radio about some issue in our country. I don't even know what the issue was now, but it was something to do with the schools and education. It could have been. And I felt in my spirit God just jar me, not a physical jarring, but just saying, Harry, you need to be the man. You need to do something. And so I began, I began that day to be involved in social issues. I started in the pro-life movement. I was involved in other issues in my local community and all over. And in 1986, I officially began, because everything up till then was just informal, but in 1986, I really got involved in the pro-life movement and pro-family movement at the county level in Illinois, where I lived, and began to speak on radio talk shows nationwide about political issues and moral issues, because the biggest thing is, in our country, the reason we're so messed up is we've separated the secular from the sacred, and we've said, God, we don't need you. We can function on our own. And so you just go mind your own business, God, and we'll do it ourselves, and we can run it better than you can.
Right.
And we sure haven't done that.
No, we haven't.
And so I began to speak out and on different issues, from abortion to family issues to financial issues to the federal deficit, et cetera, et cetera. Began to work for different candidates on both sides of the aisle at the state and federal level. Got to begin to know different people in Washington, D.C.
So you actually have Washington connections. You actually know people on Capitol Hill?
Yes, I do.
Very good. That is a great thing to know, because a lot of people would say, okay, what kind of experience does he have running a political campaign, or what kind of people does he know, or what kind of experience does he have as running for office or holding office in any kind of a candidacy situation structure.
Yeah, the important thing too is to let people know that I do have campaign experience as well. I've run for a county office in Kankakee County, Illinois. I ran as a county commission candidate as a Republican on the Republican side in 1990. I campaigned also for Steve Baer for governor. Those of you that live in Illinois remember Steve Baer, a prominent pro-life Republican. I campaigned for him. I also, for those of you on the Democratic side, I campaigned for Pat Quinn in Illinois, who was a conservative Democrat, and I'm a Republican, and I crossed the aisle. I saw a good candidate and went to help him, and he won his state. He became state treasurer in Illinois, and I campaigned for candidates other than those. And in 1993, I ran as a candidate for city council here in Port Huron, Michigan. So I've got a lot of campaign experience. I know how to run campaigns and get the job done, and I know how to work for both sides of the aisle.
Very good. That is awesome, because I know a lot of people have questioned, the likes of John McCain bringing Sarah Palin on, as well as Joe Biden on the Democratic side with with Barack Obama, and everybody has questioned the experience of all four persons in the campaign battle. However, experience is only half the battle.
Absolutely.
It is also about attitude. It's about perspective, and it's about a desire to do what's right and to have integrity. And in this day and age, integrity means a lot to people because it seems like integrity and politics don't mix. And so to have a person who has a candidacy like you coming forward with some new and fresh ideas, you know, everybody's been talking about change. Well, you know, change is important, but you have to have something that's going to actually bring about change.
Here's the other thing that's important, too, Michelle, for all your listeners, and that is that folks don't ever ask if somebody has experience, because unless they've run for unless they have held that office, for example, we're talking about the presidency right now, none of them have experience being president.
The only one that you could truly say had experience, and that was only as first lady, was Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Correct.
You know, and that's not really the same as being the president. But right now, the person who is the president of the United States, George W. Bush, you know, he served both his terms, so
correct,
he can't run anymore. So we're back to square one with, people that, don't have experience as running the free world, if you will. And, you're absolutely right. How do you feel about the whole idea of putting yourself, out there as a blind candidate in the middle of a campaign that, and I think this is interesting, you know, talking about timing. This whole campaign has been about diversity, and it's been about, the whole idea of minorities and women. And I think, what a perfect opportunity for a blind person as yourself to then put yourself out there. So I think that's very timely. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the big thing about it is it's a perfect timing, not just from a blindness perspective, but from a national
right
perspective. I wasn't even going to do this until this past Thursday. As you all know, the time of this interview is, of course, the date is the 6th of October, and the week of the 1st of October, there was a bailout on the economy.
Yep.
A bailout plan.
Something that 90% of the public disapproved of.
Exactly. And what happened? My opponents, both of them, voted for it. But Tuesday morning, I'm just waking up on Tuesday morning, and I'm going to start my day normally doing my voluntary work as a computer consultant, working with parents, also working a political consultant, and also working with parents of unpotty trained kids or bedwetting kids, which I also do. So I thought it was going to be a normal day of work. Well, it was anything but normal. I woke up and I turn on the radio and I listen to Paul W. Smith on WJR. I'm listening to his show, and they're talking about this bailout, and they're talking about we've got to have it because it's going to kill the economy if we don't, and all this fear mongering going on. And I got angrier and angrier and angrier, and it's like, God, why doesn't somebody do something? And I'm just screaming at my radio. You know, and God said to me, not audibly, but this little thought came to my mind. Harry, why don't you?
Oh, boy. Wow.
So when that happened, I immediately my adrenaline flow went up, and I just grabbed clothes, got dressed, got in the shower, got dressed, got ready, jumped on the telephones, began to talk to people in Washington. I founded the group Americans Against the Bailout that day, and began to direct and got on national radio, such as VCY America with Crosstalk, Vic Eliason's show, and others. And we heated the phone lines up. And
awesome.
And we got the job done on Wednesday night. Unfortunately, the bill was passed in the Senate.
Yeah.
Now, I said earlier we got the job done. What I meant by that was the citizens got involved. I was told on the Hill meaning Capitol Hill, I was told by people who are in the know up there, Harry, we have gotten more calls on this issue than in the last 50 years.
Wow. Incredible.
People were angry as heck. And so then after that, Thursday, I'm sitting here, Thursday morning, I'm sitting here doing some volunteer work, and I have the Glenn Beck show on. Now, a lot of you probably listen out there to Glenn Beck. Some of you might. And Dave Ramsey was on with Glenn. Now, Dave is a financial counselor. He's been in it for years and years and years, longer than I have, and I respect the man. And he said something that just jarred me. He said, somebody in Washington, this is after the bailout passed the Senate, he said, somebody in Washington, somebody in this country needs to step up and be a leader. And that just jarred me, and God said to me again in a thought, well, Harry, why don't you do it? Nobody else is doing it. Why don't you do it?
Oh, man.
And so I jumped on the phones. I began to call senators in Washington on the Hill, Senator Shelby, Senator DeMint, others, and talked to their legislative people and find out how they voted on the bailout. And I, by Friday morning, had a list of all of the senators that voted against the bailout. And I began, and I told their people that I would be looking for a running mate. It could be one of them. It could be a governor. It could be somebody in Congress. Or it could be some nationally known person nationwide that doesn't even serve in public office, but that would do my bidding when I do what I tell them to do. Because as vice president, that's what you're basically there to do. You're to break votes in the Senate. You're also to do what the president asks. And, of course, if something happens to him, then he would take over in that
Absolutely.
Spot.
Absolutely.
But as far as your question about blindness, this is a perfect timing as well. A lot of you out there have probably heard, if you haven't, you will, media things on the movie called Blindness. There's a movie that's been released called Blindness, and it's horrendous. It tells community at large that blind people are incapable of doing anything. It talks about blind people not even being able to go to their own bathrooms.
Oh, that's pathetic.
It's terrible. And
shame on Hollywood for putting that out.
Absolutely.
Shame on them.
I would
boycott that.
Yes, absolutely. And the American Council for the Blind is against it. The National Federation of the Blind is against it. And so my timing in this is perfect as well, because blind people can do a lot. The woman that's doing this interview is a blind person, and she has done a lot of things with different things in radio and writing, so she's capable. I've run for public office. I've done other things in my life. I've been a leader in my church. I've been a leader in our community and in whatever communities I've lived in. Us blind people are very, very capable.
Absolutely.
If given a chance. So it's perfect timing, and I think it couldn't be better, not only because of our lack of leadership in this country and my willingness to fill the void and confidence that I can do that, but also as a blind person, it's tremendous, because it's going to show not only blind people that they can do things, because some blind people have low confidence in themselves, but it also is going to show the sighted population in this country that, man, there are blind people out there that can do things, and I'm one of them.
Well, and I'll tell you what shook up the whole world was when that one blind fellow was sworn in as governor of, New York
State.
Yep, absolutely. And here he's blind.
Yep.
And, you know, and that's powerful. And so if you think that he can do it, a person like Harry can do it.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit then about some of your platform. What are you looking to do, not only for the country but internationally? As president of the United States.
Well, number one is the most important issue right now, Michelle, facing our country is the economy.
Absolutely.
Everybody's talking about it everywhere
right.
you go. My opponents have no answers. My opponents basically are saying the same thing that President Bush and the same thing that a lot of Democrats have said for years. Some of their things have valid points, but others are not valid. we need to shake this economy up. We need to get it rolling. And, folks, right now we're living in perilous times. We're living in a debt-based economy. Now, any of you that have played cards, for example, pretend you're holding a deck of cards in your hands. And when you have a deck of cards, if you try to build a house on a deck of cards, the house is going to fall down. If you try to build a house on sand, a house is going to fall down. We in this country for the last 120 years or so, 130 years, have built an economy based on debt. The bailout was just another example of this debt-based economy. It said to the banks, it said to Wall Street and to the firms that are failing, you don't have to be responsible, we'll bail you out. Well, I have the opposite view. We should have never done it. We still should never do it. And that's just the way I see things. So the one thing we're going to do to get this economy thoroughly rolling, and folks, in the Brown administration, when this plan is put into effect, you're going to see an economy totally take off like a rocket. You know how rockets take off down there, Michelle?
Yes.
You live near Kennedy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this economy is going to just take off like a rocket.
Awesome.
And what we're going to do is we're going to do away with the debt system in this country. This will not affect, and I want to make this clear to the voters, it will not affect people who have mortgages currently. It will not affect people who have credit cards currently or loans or any kind of lines of credit. But for future credit cards, mortgages, loans, or lines of credit, they will not exist. We will ban them. We will. There will be no more new applications issued by banks or credit unions, or loan companies, mortgage companies. We will not allow that. Instead, we're going to spend what we have, the cash that we have on hand to buy things. If you're going to start a future business, you're going to have the cash. If you don't, you save up to start it. If you're going to buy a house, you're going to have the cash in order to buy one. Now, I can hear people, because I field this question all the time, saying, Harry, this is never going to work because if you do that, people will never have the money. Well, economics 101 time here. When you do away with loans, mortgages, and lines of credit and credit cards, when you do away with buying things like that, what happens is the prices of everything, of all big-ticket items, and homes and vehicles and other things, you name it, washers, dryers, refrigerators, anything that's a, you know, three figures or more is a big-ticket item.
Correct.
Those prices will all drop. The reason, ladies and gentlemen, that prices are so high on houses is because when the loan and when the mortgage process started, it started because people realized, hey, look, if we raise the prices, people will have to take out mortgages because they don't have the money, so we can raise these prices even more.
Yep.
And it inflates the prices. When this system is implemented, when I implement, as your president, when I implement this system in my administration, the prices of all big-ticket items will fall, and the people that sell these items will have to take what a buyer brings them. For example, if you only have $5,000 cash and you want to buy a home, a person won't be able to sell it for $100,000.
No.
They're going to have to take that $5,000 because you've got it in cash right there.
Yep.
And there will be no mortgages, so people won't be able to get a future mortgage. And so the seller will say, well, I'm going to sell it. I've got to sell it. I want to get rid of it, right? So I'm going to sell it. And so everything is going to drop in price. All your big-ticket items are going to drop. And it will save the United States economy from going into bankruptcy. Folks, you can only live on debt for so long. We have lived, in, as a country, we've lived on debt for 100 or so years, even more than that, really. And I'm amazed that we're still standing. It's only because of God's protection that we're standing.
Yep.
And so this economy, if we continue to do it the way we're doing it, it's only going to get worse and worse and worse. And your taxes are going to go up You think you're paying high taxes now. When the bailout is signed into law, your taxes are probably going to go up 15 to 20%. So you're paying a lot of taxes now. Add 15 to 20% onto that, because that's where the money's going to come from, ladies and gentlemen. Anytime the government needs something, they take it from you and I, who are taxpayers. So that's the first thing that we're going to do, is we're going to get rid of this kind of debt.
Now, are we going? Are you going to, because some people, a lot of people that are really interested in the economy and really look at things the way that they really should be looking at them, are saying that we really need to get back to a gold-backed system.
Correct.
Because we have lost that, and that the Federal Reserve System has taken that from us and is printing money basically out of nothing.
That's correct.
And so how would you deal with that? How would you bring the gold back to the barn, so to speak?
What I would do is within the first 100 days of my administration, I would direct the Department of Treasury to stop printing all bills. Michelle is right, listeners. When you have money in your pocket, all you're carrying around is paper.
Yep.
That's all it is. It's paper.
Federal Reserve notes.
Federal Reserve notes. When somebody gives you a dollar bill, when somebody gives you a dollar, they're saying, I owe you one.
Yeah, that's
when
what it is.
Gives
it's
you
an IOU.
A five,
yeah.
They say, I owe you five. Our money is IOUs.
That's all
so
it is, yep.
What I will do is direct the Department of Treasury to cease printing money, and we will go to gold coins, all gold coins. We will mint them. Or the second option, which I like even better than that, because we're not actually minting, is we will go to an electronic system. We're already three-quarters of the way there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We have debit cards. If you're listening to me right now, you probably have in your wallet or your purse or somewhere a debit card or a check card.
Yep.
And so, and that's a wonderful thing, because all that is electronic money.
Exactly. It's much safer,
it's
too.
It's much safer, and so that's the route we're probably going to go, is a digital electronic money system.
The only thing I hope is that they don't start putting microchips in people.
Right, exactly. We're not going to microchip them. And I agree with that. But the big thing is also the advantage of working with electronic money is when you cross a border into another country, friends, you can use
absolutely
your card.
Absolutely. It will mirror whatever money you are working with in that country. You won't have to do a money or currency transfer.
That's correct.
You know, it will mirror what's already there.
So that's the first thing we're going to do. And this economy, once we do these three things, getting rid of the debt-based system and also getting back to and stop printing money and use actual money that's there in a digital economy or the gold standard, then we will have money to actually work with that's there. It's not something that's IOUs anymore. Plus, we will save about $600 billion a year when we stop printing money. What's going to happen if we don't stop printing money eventually is what's happening in other countries right now, and that's hyperinflation.
Yep.
And that's where we are headed. Now, the candidates don't want you to know that. My opponents haven't said that. They don't want you to know that. But that's where we're heading. We are in deep trouble. They don't want you to know that we're in deep trouble. A lot of people are afraid, but they shouldn't be afraid for the reasons that they have been afraid. Not all banks are going to go under. Not all credit unions are going to go under. Not all brokerage firms are going to go under. Those that did not participate in the subprime ARM, adjustable rate mortgage mess, are fine.
Yep.
And if your bank didn't participate mortgage company, they're fine. The next thing that we're going to do, getting away from that part of it, is we're going to, in a Brown administration, we're going to reform the tax system.
Yes, flat tax. I love it.
We have a better idea than even the flat tax, and that's called the fair tax.
Oh, yes.
It's a national sales tax, which
awesome.
Gets rid of every, if you can imagine this, friends, every tax that you're paying now. You're paying Social Security tax? If you're working, you are. Do you pay Medicare tax? If you're working, you're paying it. Do you pay income tax? If you make any money, whether saving the interest or if you're working, you're paying the income tax. Well, under the Brown administration plan of the fair tax, you won't pay those taxes anymore.
No. Nope.
And this country will no longer be losing $200 billion a year in revenue. And we lose that money in revenue because people have offshore accounts and they jobs and companies are leaving our country, as everybody knows, and that is the big reason they're leaving, is because they can go elsewhere and they don't have to pay the taxes.
Yep.
We all should pay our fair share. Everybody should pay their fair share. There is no free lunch, nor should there be a free lunch. So we will implement the fair tax nationwide. It's 23%, a national sales tax of 23%. Things that will not be taxed include food, clothing, utilities like gas, gas, electric, water, that kind of thing, because those are a must. Those are musts
Absolutely.
For everybody. But everything else will be. And we will have a prebate for people that are under the poverty level. They will be rebated because they're paying more now. They will be paying, which we should do. People should do it. But we will rebate them, and they will get a monthly rebate check from the federal government to cover what they have paid. Just like in the lender plan, if anybody's looked at the fair tax, they've seen that, and I fully support that. I'm also going to work with governors at the state level. I'm going to meet with governors, have a governor's summit at the White House. I will meet with them, and we will implement in their states, I will encourage them, to adopt a fair tax in their states, to get rid of all business taxes that businesses pay now, and it would be a state sales tax. If you already have a state sales tax, then that would be your fair tax. Where you live in Florida is a wonderful example of that. You have no income tax.
That's right.
So, and why is everybody moving there? Because, and the states like it, and Tennessee and Texas and Washington State and North Dakota, et cetera, is because in those states they have no income tax and their business tax climate is very low. But then I'm going to go a step further. I want to talk now to those of you who are homeowners. You think you're a homeowner. You're not a homeowner, ladies and gentlemen. You might think you own it and you've paid it off or are in the process of paying it off, but try to miss a property tax payment.
Oh, yeah.
Just once and see if you're still on that property. In a few minutes, once you miss the property tax payment, if the government finds out you miss it and you don't negotiate with your local county government, people in the big trucks will be coming to move your property out of your house.
Oh, yeah.
So you're not a homeowner. But we're going to get back to in this country where people are homeowners. And we're going to, I will be meeting with the governors at the same time about their income tax and business tax structures. We are going to urge them to allow or to repeal their property taxes for homeowners at the local level. When you pay property taxes, it's not a state issue, it's a tax, it's a local tax. But in some state, in most states, it's a state law that if it's like here in Michigan, at least, it's a state law that cities and counties and townships must have property taxes. They cannot change the tax structure. We will implement with the state and local governments a new tax structure with fair taxes at all levels and no more property taxes and no more business taxes. So that's a few things. I can go into it even more with other things if you'd like.
Yeah, I was curious to know, for example, kind of moving to a different topic, but not quite that different, one of the issues that really kind of has bogged down our economy and has bogged down, you know, and this is not only on the state level but the federal level, is seeing so many people on welfare and the healthcare industry zapping, you know, insurance companies of billions of dollars, and so much of that is not necessary. What would you do as the President of the United States to reform welfare as well as the healthcare system?
Well, the big thing about the welfare issue is, it, beginning in 1996, I'll take everybody back from that, welfare reform became a big issue and some implementations were done. A lot of people were against it, but they were needed. They were needed changes. But here's some the things that we have to do to make it better than it is. Number one, in a Brown administration, I am going to meet with the leaders of welfare. We meet with the leaders at the White House from churches in this country, every church, every synagogue, every mosque, every community organization. If we're going to have real welfare reform in this country, it's not going to come from Washington.
No.
It will never come from Washington. We've tried that experiment, and it's failed. Ladies and gentlemen, those of you who get Social Security, or if you're going to be getting Social Security, I'll give you one example, or if you know anybody that's on Social Security, this will make your blood boil, what I'm going to tell you. Did you know that if you get Social Security, you're getting only 24 cents per one every $1?
Wow.
76 cents goes back into running this program.
Jeez.
Now, I don't know about you, but that's not how I would want what kind of a program that works for America. We can do it better. And I have a plan that we will implement called the Win-Win Giving Community Plan. It is where people would give to a fund set up in their local church, or all the churches can come together in the community and have a fund, or churches and synagogues and mosques can all come together to set up a fund, and we will take care of each other in our cities, in our counties, in our townships, our villages, and it's not something for nothing. The more you give to the fund, the more you receive. It will be divided up among the people who give. Let's say if 10,000 people give and it takes in, $20,000. There will be $10,000 that goes back the first month to the givers. Now, that's not much money, but it will grow. This fund will grow and grow and grow. It's a 50-50 plan, we will just let it grow like a mountain. We'll just let this fund continue
awesome.
To grow. And the more it grows, the more the people will get. And in the next 5 to 10 years, people that are on Social Security will have the option to get off of Social Security because they will see how people are prospering who are giving to this fund. This economy will be taxable, it won't be taxable unless you spend it, of course, because we won't have income taxes anymore.
Right.
So the Win-Win Giving Community Fund, and I have copies of that if people want to see it, I can definitely give you a copy of that, and it'll be at www.shoutlife.com/Harry Brown.
There you go.
And it will be there for everybody to see. We will eventually phase out the Social Security system. We will phase out unemployment benefits. We won't need them anymore because people will have incomes coming in through the Win-Win Giving Community Funds that are set up all over the country. We will phase out the food stamp system because it won't be needed, because the reason the food stamp system was created was because people didn't have any extra money. This way, they will have extra money because they'll have a monthly income coming in for life. As long as they give, they will receive. The other thing that we're going to do is, as far as the welfare or the healthcare situation, the Democrats are right on one thing. We have people in this country that are uninsured. There's 44 million underinsured/uninsured people in this country.
That's right.
So one of my opponents is right on that issue that there's a concern. They're both right on the issue that there's a concern, but they're both wrong in how they want to do it. My plan will do this. First of all, there should be nothing free. Barack Obama wants universal health care for everybody, and he wants it to be free. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I think everybody listening to this knows that
nothing is free.
Nothing is free, and you're going to pay for it with your tax dollars.
That's right.
So I have a better idea. I'm going to meet with the heads of all insurance companies at the White House. We'll have a summit, a health insurance summit. There should be no uninsured person in the United States. None. And right now we have many. I will tell the insurance companies, as someone who has done financial counseling, I know that a person, first of all, let me go back. I know there are many rich people in our country. And who doesn't want to be rich? Who doesn't want to have more money in their pocket?
Oh, yeah.
to take care of themselves? But there's a right way and a wrong way to do that. The wrong way is to borrow yourself into it. The right way is to save yourself into it and to work hard and make that money. Well, I read materials by rich people, and one of the people that I've read is a lady named Laurel Langmeier, L-A-N-G-M-E-I-E-R, Laurel Langmeier. She started at 16 with her first job. By 34, she was worth approximately $1 million.
Wow. How did she do it?
Well, that's a good question. And one of the ways she did it, and she has taught her children, and she teaches other people, to live on only 50% of your income. And save 50% of your income.
Man.
So in order to do that, that means that people are going to have to be on a budget in our country. We will work to help people get on budgets. I will work with people like Dave Ramsey and people from his staff and others who do budgeting that agree with these categories and help people to get on budgets. But I'm going to meet with the insurance companies, as I said, and I'm going to say, now look, after doing financial counseling for as long as I've done it, and if we do the 50-50 plan, if you live on 50%, you have to have categories. There are 10 or 11 categories. I'm not having a budget here in front of me, so I can't quote it exactly. But I can tell you that a person should pay no more than 1.225%. 1.225% for a monthly health care insurance premium. Now, that means that nothing's free. So the Republicans are right. Our party is right on one thing. There is nothing free, and it shouldn't be free. If the insurance companies say, Harry, we can't make it on that, we're not going to make enough money, then we will subsidize it. We will subsidize them, and we will say that insurance companies cannot discriminate on pre-existing conditions. Right now, most of them discriminate based on pre-existing health conditions. If you have a pre-existing condition, good luck trying to find insurance. You won't find it.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're going to get that done. And I don't want to use a public government system if we will get this done through the private sector. If the insurance companies go along with this plan, then we will immediately, we will scrap the Medicaid system. We will scrap the Medicare system. That will save about 40% of our federal budget.
Oh, yeah.
Because 50% of it goes into programs, like these programs and food stamps and unemployment benefits, et cetera. But you can see how I'm doing things going back to the community and the private sector, which where it should belong in the first place.
That's right. Now, we're talking about paying bills and making you know, mortgage payments or even utility payments. Well, let's look at utilities for a minute, especially a power bill. If you live up north and you're in the wintertime, gas bills, because of the gas prices are going to be shooting through the roof. Even though the fuel prices seem to be going down some now, it's only a matter of time before it goes back up again, I'm sure. What would you do as the President of the United States to lower fuel costs and electricity costs and all that, for persons who need to be on a budget? Because if we're going to, save 50% of our income, our telephone and electricity and fuel costs, people who have to pay for gas to go back and forth to work, all this kind of stuff needs to be modified. You know, a lot of people are talking about alternative fuel sources and solar energy and things like this, but so much of that is expensive. What would you do as the President of the United States to help bring this economy in line in this way?
I would meet with the heads of all utility companies, and I would tell them you need to charge only certain percentages for people's bills. And these percentages are based on your take-home pay, money that you take home, or if you're on some government assistance, money that you actually receive, or if you're in the win-win giving, you participate, or if you will be in the win-win giving community fund, it will be based on money that you receive from that, and it will be percentages. I don't have them in front of me right now, but the one you heard was the health insurance, the 1.225%. There's others that are a little lower, I mean a little higher, and others that are about that percentage. There's about 10 or 11 categories in a person's budget, in an actual budget. Those will vary by category to category because some people don't have all the 11 categories. Some do. But, excuse me, they will vary from category to category. I think, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still
good.
Here.
I heard a click. But anyway, they will vary from category to category depending on a person's budget. I will meet with the companies. And at the White House, we'll meet and get these things in place. And I'm going to be telling them, look, your constituents, your customers now are going to be living on budgets. They haven't been before. You're going to need to charge them per month no more than this percentage, whatever it is. And they will have to do it. If they're not making a profit because of it, we will subsidize that as well. Because this is where the only way people are going to become rich in our country is to not have any debt, and to not pay more that they can afford to pay. There are right subsidies and there are wrong subsidies. The way we've been doing it in some things is good, but in other things it's bad. So it's very, very important how we do them and the figures that we use, the percentages that we use. And that's important. And while I'm at it, as far as the fuel costs, I want to address that issue as well. I agree with my opponents on solar. I agree with them on coal and other alternatives. I'll give you another one that they're not talking about. Water.
Yes, absolutely.
Water. And we can run vehicles on water. We can run houses on water. We can run other things on water. Wind is a good one. I agree with wind. I'll give you another one that they're not talking about, and we all produce it, and that's human waste.
There you go.
Kentucky now, Kentucky Power, one of the companies in Kentucky, is actually using it in different neighborhoods, powering homes on human waste that they take in. The city sewer department lets the utility tap in. They get the waste and they convert it over to energy. That's not mentioned a lot, but we've got enough of it, and that will never stop.
Well, that's just like, I wonder if there's a way to take all the garbage that's in our landfills and is just filling up our cities and streets and even out into our waterways and even into the oceans and things. If we could take all that trash, gather it up, and use it to burn for fuel,
that's correct.
There's got to be a way that we could do that, too.
Here's another thing that I want to say. I support drilling. And my opponents, one of them does not support it, except a little bit. John McCain supports it completely, and I do agree with him on that. So I do support drilling. We need to get it done. Congress has stood in the way for years and years and years, so I do support drilling in Anwar. I do support drilling off our coasts. Off the coast of Florida, you folks have a lot of oil.
Oh, yes. Available. We've been debating that back and forth down here.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we need to get that done as well. I'm also going to work with auto companies to get these vehicles, cars, trucks, vans, buses, et cetera, to run on other kinds of fuel. Yes, we're doing E85, but E85 is only one kind of alternative. There are others. that we should be working with Ford, GM, Chrysler, Toyota, Honda, et cetera, on. And I will be working with the automakers on those kind of things. And also, not only on what kind of fuel to run on, but I want them to have higher fuel standards. This 36 miles a gallon is terrible when you can do, when we can do 100 miles to the gallon, 2 or 3 or 400 miles to the gallon, maybe even more. So we're going to get that turned around as well.
Awesome. Okay. I'm wanting to know a little bit more, and I'm sure that our listeners would also like to know a little bit more about some of your social and spiritual or religious points of view and how you plan to incorporate that into your candidacy.
Sure.
But I'm going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. All right, folks, we wanted to make sure we weren't having technical problems because we were hearing pops and clicks, and I was hearing pops and clicks, and I just wanted to make sure that we were okay and we're fine. All right, we were where we left off. I had asked Mr. Brown about his social and religious points of view and how he plans to implement that into his administration. Like, for example, marriage and the family. How would you equate that to, or what would you do as the president of the United States when it comes to marriage and family? Because most presidents over the years, U.S. presidents, don't really focus much on that, although I do think it's important that we do establish that. But how would you legally, as well as socially, legislate that, or, you know, how would that fit into your candidacy?
There are two things. Number one, I support the Federal Marriage Amendment. The Federal Marriage Amendment says that marriage should be defined as between a man and a woman. And so I will support that. When it gets to my desk, I will sign it. I will actively campaign for it because the states have to approve it since it's a constitutional amendment. I will work for that publicly. Very, very. I'll be very vocal on that issue. The second thing that we're going to do is I will meet with every pastor, rabbi, and mosque leader from all over the country. We'll meet at the White House again for a different summit, and we're going to talk about marriage and how to strengthen the family and marriage. Marriage is the bedrock of our culture. When you get rid of marriage, you destroy the family. When you destroy the family, you destroy a nation. And so I will meet with them, and I will require of them that before you marry anyone, they must receive premarital counseling.
Right.
We know that premarital counseling works. We know that it keeps couples together. Louisiana was very, very smart in their covenant legislation. Those of you that live in Louisiana, you know what I'm talking about. And they passed that legislation down there requiring that people receive premarital counseling in order to get a marriage license. Their divorce rates have dropped in Louisiana. In other cities where churches have gotten together and had a premarital counseling policy or community marriage policy, also known as a CMP, their divorce rates have dropped. In one town, their divorce rates dropped by 900%.
Wow.
Just because of the community marriage policy. So we need to get that done. The third thing that I'm going to do as your president is I'm going to meet with with factory owners. One thing that concerns me greatly is that we are making people work second and third shifts in our country. That has to stop.
Oh, yeah.
That has to stop. I want people back home at 6 o'clock at night.
Oh, yes.
I want them to be done with work at 6 o'clock. So we're going to have a campaign that says, care about your family, be done at 6.
There you go.
And we're going to do that. I will be on all over the country on radio shows promoting that. So we're definitely going to.
And, of course, if we dumped all the income tax and we dump all this other stuff, then people won't, you know, including, you know, getting rid of the whole concept of a mortgage.
Yes.
As well as a car payment, anything on credit that just eats away at your bank account, then people won't have to feel like they've got to work two and three jobs to make ends meet. So that's a great thing, and I think once we can get all the financial stuff in order, get our national financial house in order by helping individuals and families get their houses in order financially speaking. Of course, it starts with each one of us too. But a lot of people don't have understanding and information, so I'm sure that part of your presidency will involve proper and thorough dispensing of sound information that people can access.
Absolutely.
It's often very hard, you know, when you contact various government agencies, which it would be so great to see so much of this red tape be gone.
Absolutely.
You contact a government agency and you get transferred to 10,000 people and you never get your question answered. But here's another question that has been a hot button issue for so many decades, especially after 1962 or 63, when this was removed, the whole thing about prayer in schools and the whole thing about intelligent design as opposed to the study of evolution and things like this. So many people are wanting to see intelligent design taught in schools, and I think it should be. I think if nothing else, children should have an opportunity to decide for themselves.
Absolutely.
And not be spoon-fed information. And as far as prayer in school, one should have the option, if they wish to pray over a test, to pray over, you know, an assignment that they, you know, are struggling with and all this, that they would have that option of prayer if they wish to do so. Unfortunately, that has been overturned, and then, you know, the whole idea of Roe v. Wade and this kind of stuff. What would you do about these issues?
Okay, let me go back to another issue about the economy, and then I will address the issue of prayer and abortion and creation. You mentioned about people working two and three jobs.
Right.
Another reason that people have to work so much is not only because they're in debt up to their eyeballs, but the minimum wage is too low.
Yes, it is.
We, in this country, started the minimum wage, ladies and gentlemen, in 1938. And it was started because there was no standard for a national wage. There was no national standard. Some businesses would pay 1 cent an hour. Some would pay 5 cents an hour, et cetera. He started it at 25 cents an hour. Our problem is we didn't raise it annually by 25 cents. And so we are about 45 years behind where we should be as far as a minimum wage. My plan says beginning in 2009, we will raise the minimum wage to $18 an hour.
Wow.
$18 an hour. And the reason is because when you take it starting in 1938, it was 25 cents an hour. You add 25 cents per year. Beginning in 1939, it should be 50 cents, et cetera. You continue to do that all the way to 2009, and it should be $18 an hour. You can do the math, and you'll see.
Unbelievable.
Now, will the unemployment rate go up at first? It will go up at first because it's a big jump.
Yes.
However, every year from year two on, when it's automated, and it will be automated, and it will increase annually by 25 cents per year. Now, if employers want to make a higher raise for a wage, they can. But by law, it will have to go up 25 cents a year. I want to put more money in your pocket. I want to put more money where it belongs, in your pocket. Not in my pocket, not in the pockets of people in Washington. It's better spent in your own pocket. So I wanted to touch on that issue.
Absolutely.
Now, we're going to also touch on the issue of abortion. I am pro-life. I am absolutely pro-life. I am against abortion in most cases, except to save the physical life of the mother. I will not support it in cases of rape and incest. I will not support it for sex selection. I will not support it for the emotional life of the mother, because that's an that is a convenience abortion.
Right.
All of those. Only for the one one reason. As far as creation and evolution, they should both be taught
Yes. In
our schools. Now, I am a creationist, and I believe in creation, but a lot of people don't. And I want, as you said, I want people to make up their own mind.
Right.
And it should be required by law that both views should be taught, and let these kids make up their own minds, because we don't have a lot of dumb kids out there. We've got some smart kids.
Absolutely.
And if you let them think, they'll think it through and
there
make their own
decision. There you go. That's right.
So there we go on that. The issue of prayer, we already have, I mean, people can pray still today publicly.
Right.
When I was in school, I prayed over my test. Nobody stopped me.
Right.
As far as sponsored prayers, I have mixed emotions on it. I'm going to tell you why. Because even though a lot of people are Christians in our country, many people are not. If we could do it where people who object would not be forced to pray, they could get on with their work or whatever while
right.
the rest of us are praying in the classroom before the first class of the day, I would support it if it's done that way, absolutely.
So what are your thoughts are, and what would you do as the President of the United States on the whole subject of separation of church and state?
Well, first of all, there should be no separation of church and state. What I mean by that is separation of church and state started out because of the fact that they didn't want to have a supported denomination.
Exactly.
That's why it was done. It wasn't done to take religion out of public life.
That's right.
And we have excluded religion out of public life, and we wonder why we are in the mess we're in.
Right.
There is no difference between the sacred and the secular. Principles work that are spiritual principles. Now, do I want to make everybody in this country a Christian? The answer is no. I don't want to Christianize America. I don't want to force people to worship God. I don't want to force people to pray. I don't want to force people to become Christians. But I will say this. There are principles that work that are thousands of years old that we've gotten away from because we think we can do a better job financially
right.
and how we run our government, et cetera. We can't, and we've proven it.
Absolutely.
I want to go back to also touching on another thing about the economy that I didn't mention earlier. We're going to help people get out of debt. We're going to help businesses get out of debt. We're going to help, and not with money. We're not going to subsidize them. But we can have a campaign to get everybody debt-free in this country. If you've got debt, you're going to be hearing from us. Not in a bad way, but because we want to help you get debt-free, like Dave Ramsey does and other people. We want to help businesses get debt-free. I want churches to be debt-free because when you're in debt, you can't help people in your community because
nope.
you're paying bills.
Yep.
I want community organizations to be debt-free. I want businesses to be debt-free. And I want governments to be debt-free at all levels of government. There's a man right now in the state of Maine in a city up there who I know of. Their city has no debt. They have absolutely no debt. They've had no debt for 20 years.
Wow.
I am going to appoint him as an advisor to go around this country to work with governors, mayors, and county commission heads to get every government, state and local government, to be debt-free, not only to have a balanced budget, but to not borrow any money in the future. I will also work with him and others to help our country. We have got to pay off our own debts federally, and we're going to do that in two ways. Number one, the debt that if there's any debts that our government owes that are 7 years old or older, we're going to go to the Jubilee principle.
There you
and
go.
That is a matter of forgiveness.
There you go.
And I will ask other governments that we owe and other countries. We want that debt forgiven. We will forgive their debt if it's 7 years old or older to us. That needs to happen worldwide, and I will, as much as I can, as your president, I will get that done. We will also have the balanced budget amendment that's still not been passed. for the last 20 years. I've wanted to see that happen. Congress would not do it. They will do it in my administration, or they won't get reelected. The balanced budget amendment will be passed. I want the line item veto on my desk. If 43 governors can have it, your president should have it from now on. I will work to implement that. So we will also have a balanced budget, and any debt that's 7 years old or older will be forgiven. If it's not 7 years old, if it's younger than that, then it should be paid off. We will spend about 48% of our money paying off the debt that we owe, which is under 7 years, and we will have no more debt. That means, folks, if we don't have it, then we don't spend it unless we raise the fair tax to do it. We won't borrow ever again. There will be no more borrowing from your federal government. Thus, the economy will actually explode. Take
wow.
right off.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, in the few minutes we have left, let's take a look at how, because I'm sure a lot of people are going to want to know with the fact that we're at war in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we've got, you know, all of this stuff with Homeland Security and all this kind of stuff. What kind of foreign policy ideas do you have that you plan to implement as our president?
Number one, I support the war on terror. I think the president did a great job, contrary to a lot of people's opinion. Anytime terrorists come over here, and they came over here and did what they did, we have to respond. We have to respond.
Absolutely.
And I tell people all the time, would you rather have us fighting them over there, or would you rather have us fighting them out in front of your front porch?
Yeah, really.
And the answer, of course, is no, I want them over there. and so we're going to do that. We will continue the war on terror. We will continue to fight the war on terror in any way that we can. And also saying that, we will also help internationally as far as political freedom is concerned. I am very concerned when I see China clamping down on the wonderful people of Tibet who just want a democracy. They want freedom. China says, you can't have your freedom. We're going to make sure that democracies around, that countries around this world get their freedom that don't have it now, if the citizenry wants it. We will encourage uprising. We will by the citizenry. We will encourage citizens to work for freedom. If their government stopped them, like China did in 1989, then we will issue sanctions. We will have economic sanctions. And if that doesn't work, then we will use our military if we have to. I don't want to have to, but when a country says to people, you can't have freedom, and freedom is a God-given right, then we must respond. We must be strong in the war on terror. I will continue the war on terror, and we will do what we have to do. And also, while we're on the issue of foreign policy, let me say right now, I am against illegal immigration. I support rounding the 13 million illegals up that we have right now. There are approximately 13 million. There were 12 million last year. We have another million this year. We're going to round them up and send them home. Not in a mean way, but we're going to send them back and say, if you want to come here, please do it the right way. Do it the legal way.
Yeah.
And we would love to have you. But don't come here illegally and expect us to support you. My conservative friends, I think, would, and a lot of people would enjoy what they just heard, because that's the policy we need. And I'm not saying it just because of them. I'm saying that because all these policies that I've said in this interview, because it's what I believe in my heart. So yes, we will definitely have sound foreign policy, and I also support the double layer fence along the borders of Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California, which
Very
was
good.
Not finished. And I support that, and we will get the double layer fence built.
And I think, although I don't know if you've thought of this, but I think, you know, for the 13 million illegals that we would round up and send home, rather than paying these people Social Security benefits and all these other benefits, including food stamps, what we should do is give them a payment incentive for being willing to, it wouldn't have to be much, but a payment incentive to be willing to come here legally.
That's correct.
And what they would do with that payment incentive is start a business or, do something that will contribute to our society. Because, folks, if we were to go and live in a foreign country, and I can tell you, I've heard stories about this, that people have said, well, if you're going to live here, you better contribute. We're not going to take care of you. And we've gotten into this habit in this country of taking care of people that don't want to contribute.
Absolutely.
And there are a lot of foreigners that have come over here and have started businesses. They've come over here legally, and God bless them. They've come over here, they've started businesses, and they contribute.
Very much. There
are a lot of people that are not doing that, and yes, this is definitely a problem that needs to be dealt with because, again, there's more money being wasted where it shouldn't be.
Absolutely. And also, the last thing on this issue, we will have, if needed, if the double-layer fence, if we need more after the fence is built, we will also have troops on our borders when they're not, our National Guard, et cetera, et cetera. They're available. They're willing. They've said they're willing. And I will use them to make sure that they don't, that the illegals don't come in. So that's my foreign policy things. And I will speak to the United Nations. I will address them annually, as George Bush and other presidents have over the years. And so I'm well aware of foreign policy and how to deal with it.
Awesome. I don't know if you had any final comments or anything that you would like to
yes, I do.
Close this interview out with, but feel free to share.
Yes, I do. I would just want to say to my fellow Americans that coming up on November 4th is the most important election that we've had, and I know they say that all the time, but this is truly the most important election that we've had in this country's history, or at least in the last 150 years since the Civil War. Abraham Lincoln is my hero, and he was my hero in high school when I started reading presidents, and I believe that was God designed too, because I didn't even intend on reading about it. I hated history as a kid.
I did too.
But I read, and what he did, he was raised up for such a time as the time that he was in. They ended a terrible, basically crime called slavery, and yes, a civil war was done. No, it wasn't popular. As a matter of fact, it was against 85% of his administration said, Mr. President, don't do it. He said, I have to. Duty calls me that it has to be done to save the Union, and he did. We are in perilous times in our country, and it calls for a man with moral leadership who's not afraid of anybody, who's not afraid of any party, any person, to get this job done. If you want to be involved in my campaign, I'm looking for a coordinator in 49 states. I'm the Michigan coordinator. But if you want to be involved in my campaign and you want to be a state coordinator and you want to know how to get a hold of me, or you want to read more of my position papers that we couldn't cover here in the interview, you can go to www.shoutlife.com/Harry Brown with no caps, just HARRYBROWN. You can hear this interview, or you can send your friends there to hear this interview, or you can read my position papers, and you can also read my press release, and you can see how to get a hold of me, and I'd love to have you in this campaign. We can win. It's not a matter of money. It's a matter of, do my views resonate with the American people? And I know they do, and I think we can get about a 90% victory if you get involved. So do that today.
All right, now for those persons that may not have access to the Internet nor on the Fillmore system and they would like to get in touch with you or anyone else that hears this that, would like to get in touch with you, what information would you like to give them if they have additional questions?
Well, I've got two ways you can get a hold of me. Number one, you can call 810, that's 810 area, 984-3259. That's 810-984-3259. If I'm not here, leave me a message. I'll call you back. The next way is if you want to hear anything more on the economy that I haven't mentioned or any of my other position papers that I didn't mention or that you want to hear more of, such as my pro-life paper, my pro-family paper, any kind of things like that, you can call area 773-572-6246. That's 773-572-6246. You can listen to my greeting, and it's about an hour and a half long. You don't have to listen to the whole thing if you don't want. You can hit 9 to go forward, 7 to go backward. Or you can hit the pound key to skip the greeting message, and you can leave me a message with your phone number if you have a question. And I check that box as well, and I'll be glad to get back with you on that.
And
keep me in prayer. This is a big effort, but its time is needed desperately. And in desperate times, we've seen wonderful things happen in our country, as I've mentioned earlier. And this is one of those times that a leader needs to lead, and I'm that man.
And by the way, you can do the same things with this greeting. You can pass through hitting 7, back up, hit 9. You can hit 1, and it will refresh the greeting to the beginning. And press 0 for other options if you would like to rehear this greeting.
That's if you're calling from a phone.
That's if you're calling from a phone, absolutely. But we would encourage everyone to take this seriously. If you are not impressed with the current candidates that are out there, this is a third option for you. And we hope that you will take advantage of this opportunity to make a difference in our country.
And the big thing also, before I forget, when you if you're voting by absentee or when you go to vote on November 4th, you have to write my name in. It's not on the ballot.
That's right.
It's not on an absentee ballot. So you write in Harry, capital H, then or just Harry, no caps, just write in Harry, and then a space, and then Brown, Brown.
Yeah, it's
and
all strictly write-in, folks. He's not going to be listed on the ballot boxes. So you need to write him in as a write-in. We hope everyone will do their part and step out and take this person seriously. Again, like I say, if you would like more information about his candidacy or about him himself or more about his platform, please feel free to contact him. He has given his contact info, 773-572-6246, and just leave a message and he will get back to you. But if you're leaving a message, please leave contact info so he can reach you.
Absolutely.
And we will go ahead and sign off for now, and I wish everyone the best. Take care, and God bless
Michelle,
America,
for,
everyone.
Thank you, Michelle, for letting me have a time with you, and great to be with you today.
Awesome. Take care, everyone.